gold doesn't require trust. It's kind of the Bitcoiners are taking that and twisted it. But you put gold on the barrel head, and then nobody's to trust anybody. So, you know, they're going to end up using gold as settlement, but not necessarily encourage or allow their people to use gold. You know, there's taxes on alleged capital gains in gold, which is really just a tax on avoiding fiat losses. If I did a finger painting in kindergarten when I was five, that one finger painting that may or may not have survived on my mom's fridge attached by a magnet would be infinitely more scarce. There's 21 million Bitcoins, but there's only one original Keith Wiener finger painting. And this is Karl Marx's, you know, labor theory of value, right? It doesn't have, you know, something doesn't have value because the quantity is low.
Yeah.
Also, crashing. Gold is boring and stable. But isn't that what you want your money to be?
Yeah.
Is that money supposed to be boring? I mean, you hold a gold coin, you look at it, yeah, Warren Buffett derides it. You put that in your desk drawer, 20 years later, you take it out, it's still the same gold coin. Isn't that what it's supposed to be?
Good day, everybody. It's me, your host, Just Steve Yang, here with Natural Resource Stocks, where we mine for stories that matter. And today I'm thrilled to have back with me Keith Wiener from Monetary Metals. Our friends at Monetary Metals with Keith Wiener have offered their 2026 Gold Outlook Report completely free for our listeners. And the link to the report will be in the show notes. So please check that out. Keith, thanks for the report for our listeners, and thanks for being here. How are you?
Good to be here, and thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Keith, I want to talk to you about, first off, Ray Dalio, what he said at Davos. And he said, you know, pretty much beneath the tariffs and trade wars, there's really a competition between currencies leading to an inevitable consolidation. I'm not sure if that's a consolidation of currency, money, or where do you see consolidation happening, and who are the winners and losers here?
I think the dollar has already basically consolidated it. You know, in my view, the dollar is the world's currency, and all the other local, you know, national currencies are nothing more than paper scrip. You know, I'm sure in company coal mining towns in West Virginia, some of the people must have thought that, oh, our company is so big, so powerful, that its, you know, coal bucks are going to surpass the American dollar. Maybe they believe that in some cases. But, you know, fascinating statistic. There's almost approaching $250 billion worth of derivatives out there in the world. And most of the derivatives, I mean, you have a few commodities things like gold futures, but most of them are either foreign exchange hedges or interest rate hedges.
Yeah.
And, you know, guess what percentage of those derivatives have the dollar on at least one side of the trade?
90.
It's over 99%.
99, wow.
Yeah, it's a dollar world. I mean, it is. You know, currencies are a winner-take-all game. The dollar's the winner. Been a winner for a very long time. And, you know, all the currencies are in a race to the bottom. I remember years and years and years ago, I was putting out a lot of content under the banner of the Gold Standard Institute USA, which I founded. Was still there. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. And you know, I remember I came across again Milton Friedman's thing about floating currencies. And so, you know, I commissioned a little cartoon. I'm not an artist, but I commissioned a little cartoon. And it was something like, you know, how people imagine it, and it's all these hot air balloons going up at different rates, the dollar, the euro, right? And how it actually is. And it's a bunch of, you know, it's a barbell and a lead weight and a brick, you know, all falling at different rates. They're not floating, they're falling. And but they all fall relative to the dollar, sometimes slightly slower, sometimes slightly faster. The entire paper currency complex is falling and failing. And then, you know, our point and my point as an economist for 16 years is that There is no paper currency that's going to replace the dollar. That's preposterous. However, there is one thing that can, and it's gold. And so there's a quote I love from Winston Churchill. Churchill was the master of sort of the backhanded compliment, if ever there was one. You know, there was a time when he always had a thing back and forth with Lady Astor, I think it was. And so he was drunk at some sort of party, and he says, "Madame, you are ugly." And she says, "I do believe you're drunk." He said, "Yes, but on the morrow I shall be sober."
And you shall still be ugly.
Right, that's that being the thing. So he said, "God bless the Americans, because after they've tried everything else, they'll do the right thing." I'm like, that's brilliant. That's savage. Probably more than a little bit of truth to that. And, you know, in that spirit, God bless the world, because after they've tried everything else, they're going to go to gold.
So before we talk about gold, I want to go back to the dollar and focus on that. And just kind of, I got a question about what you said about it falling, just like all the other currencies. But I mean, the dollar hasn't had a serious competitor since Bretton Woods. And so, yet there's this narrative that the dollar is not only in decline compared to other, you know, compared to gold, but it's also in threat to lose its reserve currency. You're saying the 99% part of, you know, dollars being involved. But where is that narrative coming from? Who's pushing it? Who's driving it? How much validity is there at all that the dollar is losing traction? You don't seem to have any sort of qualms about it's losing its status.
You know, economics seems to be full of exquisite ironies. And one of the exquisite ironies is that a lot of countries around the world, even ones that are friendly to the U.S., they may like the U.S., they don't necessarily like U.S. monetary policy. And a lot of countries would love to have an alternative to the dollar, either for the sake of national prestige or for the sake of something that had a policy that wasn't so hurtful to their own interests, or for whatever the reason may be, something that's more predictable, something they can control to some degree. And none of them want gold as a monetary standard. Doesn't mean the central banks aren't buying it, but yeah. You know, there's a lot of confusion in the world today, and the Bitcoiners both exploit it and promote it. This idea that if you buy something waiting for its price to go up, that you are adopting it. You know, a lot of central banks around the world are buying gold. Doesn't mean they're adopting it as money, or that they want to see their people adopt it as money. They want some alternative to the dollar, but they're, you know, I like the old joke about. There's a guy frantically searching in the grass underneath a street lamp. So there's a cop says, "Can I help you?" You know, and he says, "Well, I'm looking for my car keys." And the cop said, "Did you leave your car keys, you know, lose them on under the street lamp?" He said, "Well, no, but the light's better here." You know, everybody's looking for an alternative. You know, the BRICS countries thought, okay, maybe their currencies as a group or individually, whatever. Then they announced they're doing bilateral settlement. So Russia sold some oil, I think, to India, and India paid in rupees. And, you know, and this is the stunt, and this will get to the question of who's promoting this stuff. This is a stunt. It's a one-off that's not scalable, not repeatable. Nobody actually wants it. Maybe the Indians would love to do that, but the Russians certainly not. And then the Russians kind of spoiled it. The finance minister came out and said, "We're not doing that anymore. We do not want to accumulate," and this was his words, "a pile of useless rupees." Sounds like something I would say, but no, this is the Russian finance minister saying this. Pile of useless rupees, which, I mean, as aggressive as it was to their ostensive ally, it's actually true. India's capital controls, as does Russia, as does China, as the South Africa, you know, most of the BRICS. And with something as capital controls, that means the government actually prevents there from ever being a global market.
Yeah.
There is no use for rupees outside of India. That's what one of the consequences of capital controls. So, you know, the world would love an alternative, but they don't want gold as the alternative. And so they're sort of looking for the alternative underneath the street lamp. Now, who's pushing this? Russia, probably China as well, but Russia is definitely pushing this narrative. They want Americans, this is the old KGB tactic. You get Americans to question everything about America and the American government, distrust it, suspicion. They understand the principle. I don't know if this was Voltaire, but somebody who said, people who believe nothing can be made to believe anything. And so the KGB, were masters of this agitprop, I think they called it in the 1950s and 1960s. This idea that dollar is failing, there's going to be hyperinflation in the U.S. The rest of the world will be fine, but somehow the U.S. is going to go up in flames. In the U.S., it's the libertarian types. It's the gold bugs. It's the Bitcoiners. It's those type of people that will propagate and traffic in these things. Probably not aware that they're doing the bidding of Putin and Russia, but and a lot of other people believe this stuff because they don't understand it. They read a statistic or they see something out of focus and they think, okay, well, yeah, the dollar's losing whatever. And China is selling dollars. Yeah, China does sell dollars at times. You know why? They're propping up the value of the yuan. They're trying to maintain the yuan at a something approaching a fixed rate with the dollar, and every time there's dumping of the yuan, they have to buy the yuan, which means they have to dump some dollars. And so, are they de-dollarizing? Only in the sense that when all the dollars are finally, the last dollar of juice is sucked out of the yuan, it'll be a dead, empty husk, like an insect that's been sucked dry by a spider. There'll be nothing left of it. That's what de-dollarization will be in practice. So, the world is wired the way it is. You don't have to agree with it. An oncologist doesn't necessarily agree with cancer. But to help, cure the patient, you have to understand what's actually wrong, what's actually happening at a cellular level. That's what I try to do.
So, if I hear you correcting or correctly, you don't see a de-dollarization world. You see a de-fiatization world, and the dollar still remains king within the currencies. But going back to the BRICS conversation, if you see BRICS as merely a conglomeration of rubies and yuan and currencies that are second fiddle to the dollar, yeah, it makes sense that the BRICS currency combination or whatever is not doesn't is not going to be able to compete with the dollar from the standpoint of it's just a secondary currency and put them all together doesn't make anything. However, it seems that especially with the what we call the weaponization of the dollar or through tariffs, you see the world crying out for a different alternative. And the narrative out there is that, China and Russia is, stockpiling all this gold to basically be the leaders in a new currency era or whatever, or BRICS to tie the currency, an alternative currency called BRICS or whatever you want, to the gold or some standard where the America can't, weaponize the dollar or, have so much power with the dollar. But I hear you saying that maybe Russia and China don't want a tying to the dollar. Can you expound on that and kind of what am I missing here?
I'm saying that Russia and China and everyone else don't want the use of, they don't want a gold standard. They don't want gold to be used as a medium of exchange. They may be forced to use it in exchanges between at the national government level. For the same reason that it emerged in the 19th century, it's not that everybody agreed, it's rather nobody trusted anybody, and gold doesn't require trust. It's the Bitcoiners have taken that and twisted it. But you put gold on the barrel head, and then nobody's to trust anybody. They're going to end up using gold as settlement, but not necessarily allow their encourage or allow their people to use gold. There's taxes on caps, alleged capital gains in gold, which is really just a tax on avoiding fiat losses. If the fiat is going down at 10% a year, and you don't own it, you own gold instead. Then, when you trade that back for fiat, you've missed whatever 20% of losses. Then they tax you on the loss you missed. Very sort of monstrously unfair. But that's my contention is, they need an alternative to the dollar. They want an alternative to the dollar, but if they're going to look in other paper currencies, they won't find it. And then as they start to think about gold, they have a reluctance. They don't actually want gold to be anything, but they're going to be forced to. It's the only other thing than the dollar that can absorb the flows, has the liquidity, has the scale, has the network effect. In the case of gold, that's been built up over thousands of years, that could actually displace the dollar, but they don't want that. So that's where the world is in 2026.
So this might be an impossible question to answer, but I'm still going to ask it. Do other countries like China and Russia prefer to see a consolidation into gold or a consolidation of the dollar?
Well, the world has consolidated into the dollar, so that's sort of the present state of play. What do they really want? That's an interesting question. There's a contradiction in most people's minds about this stuff. Even the people that buy gold because they think the price is going to go up, they don't necessarily think it's money or want it to be money. They see the price going up, right? So, at any national government level, all these guys go to the same schools, and whether that be Oxford, Cambridge, London School of Economics, Harvard, MIT, Berkeley, University of Chicago, where Milton Friedman came from, it's all the same recirculated, regurgitated rubbish. Keynes, Friedman, and I'm sure any we probably don't have too many Keynesians watching your show, but any Friedmanites watching this are going to say, "What? He's actually making an equivalence between Friedman and Keynes." Yeah, I am.
Could
They
you just
weren't
say that
all that
sentence?
different. They weren't really all that different in essence. Style and approach, yes. Posturing about being for free markets in the case of Friedman, absolutely. But in their monetary policy, not as different as one might, suppose. And so there's this contradiction. Like, what do you really want?
Yeah.
And what do they really want? Yeah, indeed. They want, everybody who's in power today wants the status quo. This is another, one of my little rants when people talk about, oh yeah, the powers that be want some giant reset. The world is not full of historical examples of systems that had giant resets, where the people that were in power before the reset are still in power after the reset. In fact, it's not full of too many examples where the people in power before the reset still get to be alive after the reset. And resets tend to be pretty disruptive. Think of like the guillotine and the French Reign of Terror as kind of an example. There's many, many others. So the people that are in power just want the status quo to continue, which in one sense means the dollar regime, and American hegemony continuing. But do they really want that? Well, another part of them doesn't, but then what does the next thing look like if not that? And it's not going to be a yuan, global reserve status. The yuan doesn't have any of the things that the dollar had in 1944, and China doesn't have any of the things that America had in 1944. So that's not going to happen. So what is it going to be? Well, it's going to be gold, but as I always like to say, ain't nobody want that.
Keith, I want to move over to stable coins, modern technology like crypto. In particular, I like to ask about Tether and how modern technology, like stable coins, is Tether being pushed by the U.S. to, is it consolidating the dollar here? Is our modern technology consolidating also gold, or is it gold into monetary system, or is it more stabilizing and consolidating the dollar?
Tether and the other dollar stablecoins are a very interesting story because they're giving access to the dollar to huge populations in other parts of the world that would want the dollar, crave the dollar, and their governments make it illegal and logistically impractical and impossible for them to get dollars. Then, unless the government wants to shut down the internet, they have access to things like Tether. And so, yeah, that is going to be a huge new demand at the margin for dollars. from all the people that are subject to these governments that are imposing on them these massively inflationary, toilet paper currencies, far better to hold tether. And so I think that is going to be not re-dollarization in the sense that the dollar was lost and coming back, but a increase in dollarization. And I think we're going to see, maybe partially as a consequence of this and partially for other reasons, we're going to see peripheral currencies fall over. They just get repudiated because people would just rather have tether than whatever the local, currency was supposed to be.
Yeah. Do you, what role does Bitcoin play in all this? Is it, I know that people kind of link it to digital scarcity. You don't seem to buy that narrative. Tell me more.
If I did a finger painting in kindergarten when I was five, that one finger painting that may or may not have survived on my mom's fridge attached by a magnet would be infinitely more scarce. There's 21 million Bitcoins, but there's only one original Keith Wiener finger painting. And this is Karl Marx's, labor theory of value, right? It doesn't have, something doesn't have value because the quantity is low. That's, not how it works. And if anything, right, look at the dollar. The dollar has by far the greatest quantity of any paper currency. By like 10 country miles more than any other paper currency. And if the quantity theory of money were true, the dollar would have the least value. And that's far from the case. So what is Bitcoin? Well, it's a thing for speculation. And so I just tweeted today about, imagine a world that drives the return on capital to zero, which was Keynes' quite explicit wish. Drive the return on capital to zero, which means the return from investing in a business to zero, the return from running a business to zero, because the return on running a business is, gets a return on capital. If you drive the interest rate down, you're going to drive the return on capital down. So it's a powerful disincentive to produce anything. But at the same time, a falling interest rate means rising asset prices. So asset, you buy it, it goes up, you sell it to the next guy, and now you consume, get free purchasing power. Well, where does that purchasing power come out of? It's the previous guy's savings. Somebody forks over their life savings, you get to spend it. He would never have spent it. To him, it's savings, but to you, it's income. So you spend it.
Yeah.
Imagine a world where, savings is impossible because interest rates driven to zero. Production and business are disincentivized because the returns on capital just keep falling. But, if you speculate in the right assets, you get these massive, outsized capital gains. And then I ended the tweet, the Bitcoiners always say Bitcoin fixes this. So I ended my tweet and I said, Bitcoin exploits this. So it's, if the Bitcoiners are right, it's the best embodiment of Keynes' plan to overthrow civilization by driving, interest rates to zero, which means driving asset prices to infinity. And if the Bitcoiners are right, Bitcoin is going to infinity. They may be. But that doesn't make it money. It just means that it's a hell of a speculation. But what a world in which, I think people are trying to grasp the edges of this thing about speculation, just being betting on the price action. It's sterile. You buy a house for $100,000, or like our parents' generation, in the 1960s, 1970s, it was my parents' generation, bought a house for $30,000. When I started my career, you'd buy a house for $100,000. And, and the price goes up and you sell it. That sounds all good until you realize, okay, well, who's buying it and where are they getting the money? And you realize that's why millennials, let alone Gen Z, feel completely, marginalized.
Yeah.
If you don't have a house already, you're never going to be able to save up to one. You put money in the bank, you're not getting any interest on it. And then meanwhile, house prices are going up faster than even the nominal balance in your bank. And so they just feel left out and they feel screwed. And that's because speculation is sterile. The Bitcoiners are like, haha, we bought it. And anybody who disagrees, have fun staying poor. Well, that's an interesting, worldview. that anybody didn't already buy the money. Now think about that. You have to buy money. Okay, that's a little bit weird. But anyway, anybody didn't already buy the money is going to be left out. What kind of monetary system is that? I mean, it doesn't work as money if
First come,
one or
first
more people
serve.
is left out. Right. I mean, so no, it's just a speculation. It's just one more way, one more chip in the Fed's casino for betting on the price action is what it is.
So, for the same reason that central banks don't like gold into the monetary system, I'm guessing because Bitcoin is limited in terms of its ability to print, they're not going to be big fans of Bitcoin either. But why are they, or are they, and how much are they buying Bitcoin, and how do they view Bitcoin in this thing? Do they see it as a speculative play?
I don't think too many governments are buying Bitcoin other than El Salvador with their so-called volcano bonds. Remember that? It was like, well, we're going to harness energy out of the volcano, and so we're going to use that as collateral to borrow dollars to buy, buy Bitcoin or something. Most governments tax capital gains. So as long as something is an asset that goes up and people are trading it, I think they're happy for that because then they get capital gains tax. And it's pretty cynical, but I think you gotta be pretty cynical to be a politician today anyway. And the same thing with gold for that matter. I mean, most people aren't really using gold as a medium of exchange or any other form of money. Now, monetary metals, we're using it to finance production, which is really the root of it. But that's not yet on a scale where national governments are take notice. So as long as people are just using it for betting, I think they're perfectly fine with it. And of course, Bitcoin is a very interesting feature. All your transactions are indelible forever on the ledger. So you think you're anonymous today, but if anybody really had an incentive to figure out who is attached to that wallet ID, there's the case of Dread Pirate Roberts, Ross Ulbricht, who, it was a very savvy IT, computer guy, and knew that he was breaking the law all over the place. So he was super paranoid and super careful and willing to go to what I would call exotic lengths to avoid, being identified. Like, he never logged into his system or his Bitcoin from his own computer. He'd go to a public library, and he'd go to different public libraries, for each transaction, so he wouldn't really leave, much. Like, he was. Like, most people aren't willing to go to anywhere near that kind of length. We had one small mistake early on, and eventually they were able to trace the whole thing to him, and then all your transactions were laid bare. So imagine if every transaction in your bank account back to the beginning when you opened it were there, and it was hidden under a password, but the moment somebody can figure the password, they can look at everything. If I were a cynical conspiracy theory oriented guy, I'd say, man, this is the perfect thing for governments to promote because, well, it lets them spy on you. An awful lot of people believe that they're anonymous with what they do with it. I mean, man, that has got to be the perfect combination right there.
So let's go back to the dollar's rapid or the fiat's rapid decline. You got QE, Fed policies, fractional reserve banking, rising sovereign debt, central banks. I don't know what their positioning in gold is, if it's overplayed, underplayed. But what do you see as the biggest driver that's behind the rapid decline? And how quickly does gold and silver consolidate further into money?
So the only way to measure that decline is actually gold. If the dollar was, a few short years ago, 16 milligrams of gold, and in its recent peak, I guess January 28 was the peak, it's a little over 5 milligrams of gold. So, a drop by two-thirds, and then it blipped up to 7 milligrams or something. And how low can it go? Well, it can go to zero eventually. Of course, once people see that it's a one-way trade, that is the price of gold's going up, which is just a mirror of the dollar going down, then people feel free to enter that trade with leverage. And which does two things. One, it accelerates the basic trend that was already there. And two, anybody using leverage by definition and by nature is a short-term trade. Because either the price goes up, you hit your target and you're out, or the price goes down and your stop loss and you're out. And so that leverage, you get this incredible parabolic or vertical rise, like in silver. Oh my God, as we went from, $30 to almost $130 in what, a bit over a year. Then when the selling begets selling, because every sell, hits somebody, the next person's stop loss, and it cascades all the way down. So that's just the price action. Now, in terms of gold being adopted as money, my thesis, which was an economic thesis, and then it became a business thesis for Monetary Metals, is that finance is the key to the whole thing. If it isn't being used to finance anything, then number one, nobody has an income in gold. Gold's a capital asset. Your salary, your income is dollars. You buy gold as a capital asset. You're not going to spend your capital. You spend your salary and you put your savings into gold. Number one. And number two, companies need, they crave with real urgency, whatever currency that they owe. So imagine two businesses, let's say they're both offset printing shops, the people that stuff your mailbox full of useless ads for pool cleaning and aluminum siding and all that crap that every once in a while you just have to, empty your bin of all this stuff, right? Well, this shop's getting paid to print this stuff. So imagine two print shops. One, and they both have, a couple million dollars worth of equipment. One, the equipment's all paid off and there's no debt in the business. And the other has $2 million worth of debt against $2 million worth of equipment. So leveraged up to the hilt, up to, up to here, if not up to the eyeballs. How are those businesses going to behave, and what will be the differences? Well, the business that doesn't have the debt can be a lot more, can afford to be a lot more choosy about, which customers to have, and what, I'm not going to take that job. That's not a high margin. I can't make good margins on it. And the one that's in debt up to his eyeballs has to chase everything. He desperately needs dollar revenues to service his dollar debts. Otherwise, the bank's going to come and repossess everything. So now, if he were to finance in gold, which today is not feasible, he has a dollar income, he can't have a gold liability against it. But if he had a gold, liability financed it in gold, then he would want gold income, not dollar income. So that's where the transition occurs. We're not there yet, but in a certain sense, and I've been saying this, to my shareholders for a long time. A good working definition of a gold standard is when anybody who wants to can deposit their gold and earn interest on their gold paid in gold. That's not a formal definition, but a reasonable working definition. And therefore, the gold standard is when we scale up. That's kind of what we're aiming for. And we don't talk about that every day. You have to, you have to make a value proposition to a customer, not, promise utopia and unicorns and rainbows. But how is it possible for everybody to earn interest at real scale? You're financing real businesses. So it's the finance piece that drives everything else. Businesses need financing. That's one of the flaws. There's a number of fatal flaws in Bitcoin, and one of them is that real businesses require finance. You don't get to be a major corporation, for that matter, even a chain of 10, 12 hamburger restaurants without finance. And so where does that finance come from? Who puts up the capital? And gold always was a great way of doing that. And you have to find a way to bring that back. That said, who wants that right now? Well, certain businesses want it. And the savers who want to be able to save in something that can't be printed or devalued, they want it. By the way, my challenge to the Bitcoiners is out there and it's open. If you think Bitcoin will work for financing business, have at it. The problem is, if you are right, that is, if what you are promising is true, then Bitcoin is completely unusable for finance. Who the hell would borrow something that's promised to go up 18 billion times. It's like your mortgage going up 18 billion times. I mean, everybody
Pretty wild.
ruined, bankrupt, right? So if Bitcoin delivers on its promise, it doesn't work as money, let alone if it doesn't deliver on its promise, it has other problems. So whereas gold doesn't skyrocket, right? So the Bitcoin is, Bitcoin is going up faster than gold. Yes, Bitcoin is obviously superior to gold at skyrocketing.
Yeah.
Also crashing. Gold is boring and stable, but isn't that what you want your money to be?
Yeah.
Is that money supposed to be boring? I mean, you hold a gold coin, you look at it, yeah, it's, Warren Buffett derides it. He puts it in your desk drawer, 20 years later you take it out, it's still the same gold coin. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Is that a feature or is that a bug? You know.
Yeah. Keith, so monetary metals, you guys have an interesting concept that, I mean, it seems to be what people want. You're like, you're right. I don't trust Bitcoin is going to be able, Bitcoiners are going to be able to finance their stuff with their Bitcoin. Now, you have a concept where you earn a yield on gold, paid in gold. If you can walk us through how the process works, you know, how people earn gold in their gold, how payouts happen, how, if any, potential Fed rate cuts affect earnings, if at all. I mean, can you tell me how it works?
So, you know, the thing about gold, and one of the, they have several reasons why they hate it, but one of them is they can't control the interest rate. You know, in the dollar, they control the interest rate. It's you know, the Soviet 5-year plan, it's Gauss plan. You know, the commissar set the rate and you will like it. And the gold doesn't work that way. So they hate it. So, you know, monetary metals, we offer a pretty conventional metals account, you know, metal storage account. And there's a lot of companies that do that. I think one difference with us is you can actually send in physical metal. I don't think the other guys will let you send in a stack of gold eagles or Canadian maples or British sovereigns or, you know, kilo bars stamped out by Johnson Matthey or whatever. Or, you know, you send in dollars. And then you have metal on account. Okay, that's pretty conventional. But then we present a series of opportunities to get a yield on it. For non-accredited investors, there's only one program that we have right now. For accredited, there's a second one I'll mention in a minute. But for non-accredited, it's leasing. So there are lots of businesses that need gold as inventory or work in progress. So think jewelry manufacturer, jewelry retailer, refiner, mint, fabricator, coatings, platings, you know, industrial processes of all kinds. And they got to have a metal at all times. And now if this was copper, copper's $5 a pound, you just buy it, you don't sweat it too much. But this being gold, at $5,000 an ounce, that's got to be financed. So if you take a standard ethnic, you know, jewelry store, so in Canada and the US and the UK, I know there are stores, and we have a client named Callian. I know they have stores in North America. I know they have stores in the UK. You go into that store, you know, the jewelry is basically sold by weight plus a making charge, they call it. And that's what the people are buying. They want to know, okay, I'm buying 5 grams of gold. And they happen to prefer it as jewelry rather than as little, you know, 5 gram bar. But that's, you know, the Indian culture, the Arab culture, the Turkish culture, that's kind of how it is. So that jewelry store would have maybe on average of 50 kilos of gold in it. Now 50 kilos today is, what is that? I'm close to $8 million, I think. That has to be financed.
Yeah.
So conventional finance, the jeweler would go to a bank or another conventional lender, and they borrow the $8 million. So you have $8 million worth of gold as the asset. You have $8 million loan, which is liability. Okay, fine. What if the gold price drops 10%? So now you have, $7.2 million worth of gold, but you still have an $8 million liability. You're insolvent. And so, you know, that doesn't work. So what they do is they end up borrowing like $10 million, put $8 million into gold, $2 million into a margin account and short gold futures. Now you're hedged. And the problem with that is, what if the gold price goes up? You get a margin call. What if it goes up again and again and again and again, relentlessly for 2 years, which it has done? So the worst case scenario is it goes up and up and up, and you keep feeding the margin meter until one last time and you don't have any more capital. Your pockets are empty. You've checked under the sofa cushions. You don't have any more capital to feed the margin meter.
Yeah.
And so your margin account gets zeroed out. Your hedge is eliminated. And then the gold price peaks and it drops $800, which happened on January 29th. Was it 800? I think it was about $800 January 29th. And anybody who lost their hedge in the run-up days before that and then watched that drop, that's the worst-case scenario. Whereas if they lease the metal, they have no price exposure, and so they can sleep at night. So they're getting a better form of finance, a more user-friendly form of finance, and the people that own the metal still own physical metal. You can walk into that jewelry store and say, I own, you know, if you're an investor with 10 ounces in that lease, you can point to 10 ounces of jewelry and say, yeah, that's what you own. So you still own physical metal, you have the title to it, but now you're getting a return of 4% paid in metal, all right? So 10 ounces at the end of the year, you have 10.4 ounces. So, you know, an increase in the gold. So that's what we're doing for, you know, it's open to all investors. We also have a gold lending for companies that don't have inventory but have a gold income, which would be mining companies. There'll be others, there'll be industrials too, but let's say mining companies. Different risks, higher risks, obviously, much higher interest rate. Those will be, you know, typically teens for interest rate, you know, certainly well into double digits. And that is for accredited investors only.
Keith, if you can tell us about your website, your socials, any way people can find you. And if you can also tell us just briefly what the 2026 Gold Outlook Report's all about and how people can benefit.
So I was going to say Twitter, I guess it's called X nowadays. I'm at Real Keith Wiener. That's KEITHWEINER. There are imposters that love to misspell my name to try to siphon off my, you know, would-be fans. the website is monetary-metals.com. You know, so every year, and we've been doing this since, I've been doing this even since before there was a monetary metals. I've been doing this going back to 2010, is to take a look at the year retrospectively and then take a look at the coming year. So, okay, this is what I see in terms of macro forces. This is what I see as the main narratives. This is why those narratives are wrong or fallacious or whatever. I do try to give myself a report card on my predictions for the previous year. So in case anybody wants to know, for 2025, I said gold could hit 36 or 3,700 and silver could hit 37. I'll actually call that a victory because I'm not trying to be really aggressive. I'm trying to say,
yeah,
here's the direction.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to go at least that far. And we did go at least that far. We went farther, especially in silver. In gold, that wasn't too bad a prediction.
So what was your prediction in silver?
37. So I'm saying we went way, way past my prediction in silver, obviously.
Yeah.
Gold, you know, wasn't too far off. So I won't say what the predictions are for 2026, because obviously, you know, people need to read the, because, you know, it's not just the number, right? I mean, it's like, that was the joke with, you know, Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And the answer is 42. Okay, but, you know, show your work. I don't want to just, you know.
I read the report. It's worth reading. You're worth downloading. Again, I'll put it in the show notes. Keith, go ahead.
What I do want to say is that,
yeah,
that's the trend.
Yeah.
We're in bull markets.
Well, the report, once again, is free for our listeners. It's going to be in the show notes. Keith, thank you so much for your time. It's always a pleasure talking to you. For everyone, I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people smarter than me, like Keith Wiener here. Everybody stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks, Keith.
Thanks, Steve.